السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. نحمده ونصلي على رسوله الكريم. أما بعد، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. We have been discussing mehr. We have discussed the importance of mehr, the status of mehr in Islam, etc. Now we discuss two types of mehr. Important thing to remember is that in the Hanafi mazhab, the mehr has to be wealth. Whether it is in the form of money, whether it is in the form of gold, whether it is in the form of silver, but it has to be some wealth. The mehr cannot be, for example, a person says that, okay, I'll teach you 10 surahs of the Quran. That will be the mehr. Maybe he's getting married to a new Muslimah. So he says, okay, I'll teach you deen. That will be the mehr. Right? So this is not allowed. There has to be some wealth that is given to the wife. Right? Now, with regards to this wealth that is given, we get two types of mehr. One is called Mehre Mu'ajjal. Mu'ajjal with an Ayn. Mehre Mu'ajjal with an Ayn. And the other one is called Mehre Mu'ajjal with a Hamza. Right? Basically, cash and credit. Cash and credit. That is what it is. Mehre Mu'ajjal means that you are going to give the mehr promptly. So this mehr becomes binding as soon as the nikah is performed. So you could have either given it before the nikah, or you give it at the occasion of the nikah, or immediately after the nikah. But once the nikah is performed, this mehr is now binding. Right? It's, you have to give it. Right? There's no way of shying away from it. Just take a message. Ask him what he wants. Right? So, this is mehre mu'ajjal. Now this mehr, if it wasn't given at the time of nikah, at any time if the wife asks for it, it needs to be given to her. At any time, if she asks for it, it must be given to her. Right? A person, when the wife asks for it, he cannot dilly-dally with regards to it, because it's already binding. As soon as the nikah was performed, he's supposed to have the money. So if he never give it that time, and after 1 month she asks for it, or after 2 months she asks for it, immediately he must pay it. He has to give it. Right? The second mehr is mehre mu'ajjal with the hamza. This is where a man is not going to give the mehr immediately. Right? Maybe now expenses of the walima, whatever, or he's a student of deen, he's getting married, he doesn't have money. He wants to give his wife mehre fatimi, but he doesn't have the money right now. Right? So he says that, okay, I will pay you on certain date. 2 years from now, 1 year from now, 3 years from now, 6 months from now. So this is like a debt on his head now. The wife is saying, okay, no problem. You can defer the payment of the mehr to a certain date. The important thing here is that the date must be stipulated. The date must be stipulated. And once that date comes, then the husband must ensure that he pays the mehr on that date. If for some reason or the other, the mehr was not paid, whether it is mu'ajjal or mu'ajjal, whichever one, whether it's cash, prompt or deferred, whichever one, if the mehr was not paid, then immediately on the passing away of the wife, or the passing away of the husband, or in an unfortunate circumstances of divorce, the mehr becomes due immediately. Right? So these are the different types of mehr. So say for example, you are getting married, you want to give mehr a Fatimi, but you only got 5,000 rand, and mehr e Fatimi is now 10,000 rand, for example. So you can also do this. You can say the mehr is stipulated at mehr e Fatimi, right? Prompt is 5,000 rand, deferred is 5,000 rand. Prompt is mehr e Mu'ajjal, immediately now when the nikah takes place, I'll give 5,000 rand. 6 months from now, I will give the other 5,000 rand. This too is permissible. Person can do this. So if a person doesn't have the mehre Fatimi and he wants to make amal on that sunnah and he doesn't have the mehre Fatimi, then he can resort to this. Give how much he can give now and defer the rest for a later date. Right? You can even put it in installments. Right? You can say, I'm giving 50% of the mehr now, then I'll give 20% end of this year, another 20% end of next year, and the last 10% end of the third year. Right? All this is permissible. Okay. So this is just explaining to you the two types of mehr. Now, in our zamana, you see, sometime when the kitab is written, etc. So the, just 1 minute. Okay. Sometimes the customs are different from India to here. Customs are a little bit different. So we will look at it in our context, our South African context. You see, in India, what used to happen is that at the time of Nikah, the boy's family, or sometimes even the girl's family, now to make the girl look smart, and now they are poor people, they don't really have much wealth, etc. Now they wanted to look smart, so what they do is they lend her some jewelry for her wedding day, either the boy's sister or the boy's mother, they'll lend her some jewelry, etc., to use for her wedding day. So that is only lent to her. That has to be returned thereafter, right? Now, what happens with us in South Africa is that our old people, they bring back certain things from India, right? But it's not happening here like how it was happening in India, but they want to apply those same things here, right? In today's times, nobody lends anybody jewelry. Today's times, when a girl is getting married, the boy bought one ring for her, and there's no such thing that you have to buy a ring. There's no such a thing as a wedding ring in Islam, engagement ring, wedding ring. All these things are all kuffar concepts. There's nothing wrong if you give a ring, but you mustn't think that now you're getting married, so you have to give a ring. Right? There's no such a thing that you have to give a ring. We're talking about wedding ring. Let me tell you one story about wedding rings. I gave my wife wedding ring, I think after about 11 years of marriage. 10 years or 11 years of marriage, I eventually bought her one ring, gave her one ring. Right? Now there's an ajeeb story about this ring. We went to one place, had some programs there and all that, so we went to this town in the Eastern Cape and we stayed at a certain place, and now the next morning, after that few days that we stayed there, when we were leaving from there, so this wedding ring was on the head side, right? What you call a wedding ring now. It's a ring. Ring is a ring. Now you call it wedding ring or whatever ring, is a ring. So this ring was there on the head side. So now in the packing and cleaning and whatever, that ring got knocked and it fell somewhere. Now we're looking for this ring under the bed, behind the bed, behind the headside. Can't find it. Just cannot find it anywhere in the room. And now we need to leave. Now he said, hey, what are we going to do now? Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi rajiun. I said, it took me 10, 11 years to get you one ring. Make dua, it don't take that long to get you another one. Now we have to go now. So we told that guest house, we told them, look, we lost one ring there in the room. If you will find it, please contact us. We left our contact details. Now who's going to contact you if they find one ring? But anyway, you say sometimes there's some honest people in the world, so we told them, just contact us. And we went away. Exactly about a year later, we had to go to that same town, and we stayed in that same guest house after 1 year. So when we went there, so Apa had one small bag and she took all the things from the bag and she turned the bag, you know. When she turned the bag, the ring came out. So that ring had fallen into the bag. We didn't look in the bags. We were looking everywhere else. But that bag stayed whole year. We used it 1-2 times and all that. We didn't find the ring. After 1 year, we went there, the ring came out. So this is Allah Ta'ala's system. Allah Ta'ala sometimes tests you. He wants to see what is your attachment to worldly things. But here, so in today's times, what we were talking about is people give jewelry to the bride as a gift. Now, when does this gifting start? It starts already from the engagement. Once the both parties have agreed now that the answer is yes on both sides, so the boy's side, they go and put one chain for the girl, as if to say, now they're chained up, right? You can't go nowhere else now. You are booked. So they chain up. And if the families are wealthy, then over and above giving a chain, they will give all other presents and everything. And the girl side also, they give the boy a couple of things. And now when it comes to the wedding, now again, the boy side put one ring and one gold jewelry set, and they give her this gift. Now, depending on their financial standing, they will give her different gifts. Now at that time, nobody is thinking now that this marriage is not going to work out. Everybody is hoping that now these two will live happily ever after, right? So a lot of expensive gifts are given, sometimes even a motor car is given, right? Depending on the financial standing of the family. Now there's nothing wrong in giving these gifts. There's nothing wrong in the boy's side giving the bride these gifts, as long as a show is not made of it. Now we're going to come to the show business just now. So they gave all these gifts, everything is fine, sorted out. Now there's a problem, right? Say for example, let's come before the wedding. There was an engagement, they gave her one chain, they gave her one Raymond wheel watch or some expensive watch, and they gave her some expensive shoes and some expensive outfit, whatever, some perfumes and things. They gave this bride a good few thousands of rands, right? And now for some reason the engagement breaks. Doesn't it happen in today's times? Engagement broke. We gave those things as a gift. We got no right to ask for it. That now we gave it because we thought we're getting married. Now we're not getting married, so give everything back. Whatever we have given is given. And a girl also must not feel guilty in keeping it. It's hers. It's hers. Yes, it will not be ethical for her to keep it if the engagement broke because of her. The engagement broke because of her, it won't be ethical for her to keep it. It'll be better for her to return it. But if she doesn't return it, it's a gift that was given to her. If we are friends today, right, there's no compulsion on me to give you a gift. Neither is there any compulsion on you to give me a gift. But if I gave you a gift, or if you gave me a gift, now tomorrow we have an argument, can I come and tell you I want my gift back now? You can't do that, right? So whatever was given, whether it was at the time of engagement and now the engagement broke, or whether it is at the time of the nikah and now the nikah is breaking, the istalaq that is taking place, then too, nobody can ask for the gifts back. Right? Sometimes people spend so much of money on the wedding that I've heard of cases where now there's a breakup in the marriage. Now the girl's side is suing the boy's side for the expenses that they had to incur for the wedding reception. Now, in the first place, why go and do all these things? When an engagement takes place, by engagement we're not talking about what people regard as an engagement in today's times, one big party. We're not talking about that. We're talking about what we spoke about, an engagement. Engagement, basically the both of them are engaged. He said yes, she said yes, right, they're engaged now, we're just waiting for the nikah. So at the time of engagement, there's no need to give any gifts. If you gave a gift, you gave it. Now if something happens, don't ask for it back. But there's no need to give any gift. Right? Best is don't give any gift. And get married quickly. Get married quickly, then there's no reason to chain her up. Because you're getting married now, 1 week's time, 2 weeks' time, so what's the problem? You don't have to chain her up. Right? That is number one. At nikah time, you want to give gifts. I mean, it's a norm in today's time. It's good also if you're giving your wife certain gifts. She feels comfortable. She feels valued. She feels like, no, look at this. They're making a, you know, for her to leave home and come to another environment, it's not easy to go into somebody else's house now. So now by giving her some gifts and doing things up for her, making her room smart and whatever, it makes her a little more comfortable. It makes it easier for her to blend into this new home. So those gifts that are given, they are given in all good faith. Right? And it cannot be taken back. Meher cannot be taken back. Gifts cannot be taken back. Right? So if there is a breakup in the marriage, then it's one of those things. It's one of those things. Whatever we have given, that is given, it is gone. Right? Allah Ta'ala will give us barakat, we'll be able to get more. And for the girl also, whatever she has given to her husband, it's given, it's gone. She can't say, no, I want everything back now. Right? Whatever the families have given, it's gone. What's given is given. And if we are lending something, then we must be very, very clear from the beginning. From the beginning, we must be very, very clear cut that, look, we're just lending you this. We're not giving you, we're only lending it to you. Right? Must be clear about it. But if we gave something, then we gave it. Right? Now this is with regards to the gifts. Now we come to trousseau. Right? You see, if you read through the kitab, we'll just read a little bit from the kitab and then we'll do a little bit of explanation. Our author, he says that after a study of the Hindu culture books, as I said to you, many, many things that we find prevalent in our society today comes from this Hindu culture. And that's why slowly as we are moving further away from life in India, we are moving away from these customs also. But in certain families, these customs are very, very embedded. Right? So we have to understand what is culture and what is deen. Now must remember, our background is Hinduism. After that we accepted Islam. I'm not talking about ours personally, I'm talking about our ancestors. We came from India. There was Hinduism rife there. And our people lived very close with the Hindus. Now, certain families became Muslim, but they were still living close to the Hindus. So the things that the Hindus were doing, they were also doing when they were Hindus. And when they became Muslim, they brought some of that baggage with. Like you see this fire walking and all of that. That is a Hindu culture. But our Muslim people want to do it on 10th of Muharram also. It's all Hindu culture that they bring and come. So khair. After a study of the Hindu culture books, it appears that according to Hindu culture, there is no inheritance for the woman. Therefore, at the time of marriage, the bride is showered with gifts and sent off. According to Hindu culture, the best wedding is called Brahma. Right? The Brahma is the best, where the bride herself makes a gift of herself to the husband. So when she makes a gift of herself to her in-laws, the father is giving her off as a gift to her in-laws, where she no longer now has any ties with her family. She's no more regarded as the daughter of her father. She has now been gifted to this new family. So now, when they're doing this, in order to please her and appease her, the father sends her off with a lot of gifts and wealth and jewelry and whatever. That, look, we don't hate you, that's why we're giving you away. We love you and all that. We're giving you away with a very hard heart, but we want you to be a very special bride, that's why we're giving you away. Right? Now, after the marriage, she cannot any longer return to her family, regardless of what oppression her in-laws mete out to her. She cannot separate from her in-laws, and she does not inherit in her parents' estate. After the death of her husband, she cannot remarry. Right? She has the choice of either being cremated together with her dead husband or leading a single lonely life. Right? Now, you see, if you speak to your parents, you speak to your grandparents, they will tell you that even in South Africa, amongst our South African Muslims, if a lady's husband passed away, it was regarded like totally taboo for her to remarry. Whereas, Deen and Shariat allows her, immediately her iddat is over, next day she can get married. In fact, Deen and Shariat promotes this. But amongst the people, the older people, maybe you all won't be too much aware of it because we are moving away from these customs. But if you ask the older people, they tell you it was regarded as like a terrible thing. How can she remarry? Her husband must be turning in his grave. How can she marry somebody else? They used to talk to this, the old people. Now, all that ideologies came from Hinduism and nothing to do with Islam. Absolutely nothing to do with Islam. Every one of the Ummahatul Mu'mineen radiallahu ta'ala and Hunna ajma'een, besides Ma'aisha radiallahu ta'ala, were all married before. So it got nothing to do with Islam. Right? This is a Hindu culture. How can she marry? And sometime, if the husband passed away and now the lady got married, you know, after her iddat, her husband's body is not even cold as yet, and she's already getting married. And amongst the older people, this concept is still there. I'm talking about in recent days. Two, three years ago, one man passed away. And now, you know, you must remember something. A widow, initially, first couple months and all, people worry about them. After that, the next widow came on the scene. People forget about this widow. Right? The family told, they get involved in their own work and all that, they forget about this woman. They then lead a very, very difficult, lonely existence. So this lady, somebody proposed to her, and she there was no family, no father, nothing. So she phoned to ask me, said, this man proposed to me and what do I do and whatever. So I advised her, I said, look, if you are happy, make istikhara, whatever. If you are happy, get married to him. Family members of her first husband, night, they came to me. So, Maulana, we're having very bad dreams. Husband is very, very upset about all of this. And his body is not even cold, and she already got me. I say, Baba, how you know his body is not cold? You went to check. So your dream is upside down. Your dream is upside down. Deen and Shariat allows, what must she do? What must she do? You all staying nicely in your houses. You got your husband, your wife, your children, your in-laws, your parents. You living your life. So what must she do now? Just sit down lonely in one home and just carry on her life like this? Deen says she should rather marry. Deen says she must rather get married. It's better. One day after her iddat is over also, she can get married. There's no need for her to wait for a couple years and all that. One day after her iddat also she can get married. Yes, while she is in her iddat, she cannot marry. But as soon as her iddat is over, she can get married. So this was the Hindu culture. Right? It is written in the book of the author, the position of woman in Hindu civilization is that the bride should be given in marriage along with suitable ornaments, but their number and price is left entirely to the discretion and ability of her father. This custom was initially rife amongst the elite of the Hindu society, but later gained so much popularity that it was practiced widely. This is the reason why the government eventually introduced the Dowry Prohibition Act in 1961, which threatened a 6-month jail term or a fine of 5,000 rupees for anyone practicing the dowry system. The situation in India made a mockery of the governmental and divine laws. According to one report, in Delhi in the year 1975 alone, 350 brides were burnt to death alive. The husband died, so the cremator was the husband. Between June 1980 and 1985, in a single province of Maharashtra, 200 women were murdered in this way. In Lucknow, one bride in every 5 days was a victim to this curse. Now, what happened among the Muslims is we don't practice this. But this concept of the father proving his love to his daughter at the time when he's getting her married, this remained. Right? That now he must have a big wedding reception and he must give gifts and he has to, you know, call out half the town, and he must give his wife also a lot of gifts. She must go with a lot of things. They must sew her trousseau. She must go and she must take a whole wardrobe and go. So many shoes and so many outfits and whatever. Right? And in the Memon community, this thing is so rife, right? That in amongst Memon people, I hope it's a dying thing, but up to, of late, the custom amongst the Memon community is that the father of the bride, he must do up the room of the bride in the husband's house. He has to do the cupboards and buy the bed and do the headboard and everything. He has to do it up. Now it will depend how much he loves his daughter now. That's like to show how much he loves his daughter. Now how foolish is all of this? The groom, that's all his job. Is his duty and responsibility. Not the girl's father's duty now. The girl's father looked after that girl till her wedding day. Now it becomes the responsibility of the husband. Husband must now take over. Right? So we moved away from the Hindu custom, but we still brought some of the badbu, some of the stench of Hindu actions. We have got it still in our lives. And now this is why they make kunchas. You ever thought about why they make kunchas? This is why they make kunchas, because you have to make a display of whatever your father gave you and your mother gave you and your granny gave you and all. You have to make a display of it. So the boy's side must see. They, no. Our family ready. You know, they value her like. But then the boy's side now, they don't want to feel left out. So they too make kunchas now. And all must be brought to the hall, must be on display now. With this one's name, who gave this, who gave that, who gave this. All these customs are Hindu customs. They got nothing to do with Deen Islam. Even if we want to give a gift, must give a concealed gift. There's no need to put a gift on display. The kunchas and all that is not allowed in Deen. And you make a big kuncha and it's all displayed and you put it there in front and all. All this is not allowed in our Deen. Then the treatment of the daughter-in-law. Why is a daughter-in-law so ill-treated? That too comes from Hindu custom. Right? We will discuss that inshallah in the next period. Allah Pak give us tawfiq. Subhanallah wa bihamdihi. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdik. Nashhadu an la ilaha illa anta nastaghfiruka wa natubu ilayh. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.